Divided Kingdom, the evening news program with a Christian slant. I am Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly, and Lou Caverly and I will be bringing you some hard-hitting news tonight on May the 4th. It's so important that we know what's going on in our world, very much so. And with all of this controversy about fake news, it looks as though InfoWars sometimes has it right before all of the others, but they don't get credit for it. So you ought to pray for Alex Jones and InfoWars and Dr. Jerome Corsi. It's so important that they get to keep bringing out a lot of information that you can't get other places. And we know that we're told by the mainstream people that we have a religion of peace with Islam. So TNS had an article, and this was dated April 17th, Monday. Thousands of Muslims gather for annual peace convention. And let's give a little background here. You remember that in 2015, Freddie Gray was the person who was taken by the police, and he died. And, of course, they didn't give him very good treatment. They gave him a rough ride, and he had had a back problem. And they had him in such a way that he would flop around, and it really was terrible. And so I don't think they paid too big of a price. But we know now that the Baltimore mayor is calling for federalization of the police. That ought to give us a lot of comfort when we couldn't get justice for Freddie Gray. But we did get a little more justice for that other black man who was shot down in the South. That was very important. And we'll get to that a little bit later. We'll tell you about that. And it does show that sometimes people actually do take responsibility for their sins and transgressions. But right now, we're looking at this headline, thousands of Muslims gather for annual peace convention, Baltimore. An estimated 20,000 Muslims from across the country are in downtown Baltimore. And recall, this was April 17th, Monday, over the Easter holiday weekend. This is retrospective, we see now. For the Islamic Circle of North America's annual Conference for Peace. It is the 42nd annual convention for the group, and the third straight year it has been held at the Baltimore Convention Center. Quote, "We're bringing like-minded people together to celebrate our religion and do good," said Harris Kudzi, outreach coordinator for ICNA Relief, a charitable nonprofit arm of the organization. Kudzi said, "Baltimore is an ideal location, given the active Muslim community in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, and the city's easy accessibility from other states." The group first held its convention in Baltimore in 2015, just after the unrest following the death of Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old who suffered fatal injuries while in police custody. Inspired by the protests, Kudzi said the group created hundreds of, quote, blessing bags of basic necessities, including toothbrushes and soap, to give out in the community. Their group has repeated the effort each year since then. This year, it handed out more than 750 blessing bags to the homeless and distributed 1,000 hot meals of chicken, rice, and vegetables in coordination with the Islamic Society of Baltimore and several interfaith groups. Quote, "We're about people coming together and help in times of need," end of quote, he said. The opening message from the ICNA president, Javed Siddiqui, read, "This year we are meeting in the midst of new political climate that has invigorated renewed interest of political and social activism within the American Muslim community," end of quote. Several convention sessions, including combating Islamophobia, asserting your rights under Trump presidency, and working through challenging times, address concern spreading through the community given a spike in hate crimes against Muslims and the Trump administration's moves to block refugees from Muslim-majority countries. One session called Welcome Refugees included more than a dozen recently arrived refugees from Iraq and Syria who spoke of their struggles in the months following their arrival in the U.S. Most said they had understood from the United Nations that they would have 1 year of full assistance during which they could learn the language and get situated. But family after family spoke of their surprise when they found they would just have 1 month of full resources and then were told they needed to get a job and survive largely on their own during that second month and thereafter. Hanan is male, single mother to a 17-month-old girl, is a refugee from Iraq who attended the session. She said she was told she needed to have a job after 1 month, though she had yet to learn English or find affordable housing or daycare. Ismail, 31, lives in Baltimore in an apartment that costs $925 per month, which she said was too expensive for her. She said religious groups have helped to fill the gap, but she is looking for more affordable housing and more time to get on her feet. Samar Daz, 43, from Syria, said he's resorted to looking in the garbage for furniture and other necessities for his family. He spent the one-time $1,850 stipend he and his wife received on rent. Daz, like other refugee families, collects food stamps, but said the amount has decreased over time. Hala Halabi, director of refugees facilitation for ICNA Relief, said she hopes the conference will help facilitate aid for many of the refugees. My job is to make their life easier, Halabi said. That's why we invited them here to see how we can help them. She said her group will be looking for resources to help with rent, furniture, language classes, and finding jobs. And so, of course, there we have the persona of peace and harmony and interfaith and some nice things being done for the people of Baltimore, the homeless. That certainly strikes a good note with everyone. The chicken, rice, and vegetables, the 1,000 hot meals. But at the same time, might it be that we have a Trojan horse and we're just looking at the outside of this wonderful horse? It's like a merry-go-round horse with its wonderful black mane and the paint that was put on it early in the 20th century. And we hear the music in the background of the merry-go-round going around. It's almost like a calliope sound. But at the same time, we're jarred into another headline, Lou Caverly.
Movie exposing genocide against Armenian Christians targeted by Muslim activists. The Promise, which opens this weekend and stars Christian Bale and Oscar Isaac, is the first mainstream movie to tackle the Armenian genocide against Christians by Muslims in Turkey in 1914-15. It's a surprisingly effective and fascinating epic of this awful moment in history. However, the movie already has some vicious enemies because it exposes one of the most violent episodes in the history of Islam, which is clearly the most violent religion in history by far. By the time The Promise was released to the public, the movie on IMDb, which is a movie rating website, received more than 129,000 ratings, with about 48% of them giving the movie the lowest rating. The people rating the movie turned out to come from a Turkish message board similar to Reddit. The Islamic dictatorship of Turkey for some time has tried to argue that the deaths of 1.5 million Christians wasn't genocide. But historical evidence blatantly contradicts this false claim from Turkey and other members of the Muslim quote-unquote faith. Former MGM owner Kirk Kerkorian single-handedly funded The Promise. The main hope for the filmmakers behind the $100 million movie seems to be awareness rather than profit, with the distributor, Open Road Films, committing to donate all proceeds from the movie on behalf of the production company, Survival Pictures.
And again, another aspect of this Trojan horse, there was an interview with director, movie director Terry George, and talent, and what he said was he updated us on the situation that George said there was a denialist propaganda machine behind, quote, The Ottoman Lieutenant, a film with strikingly similar elements to The Promise, but which allegedly takes the side of the denialists. Ottoman Lieutenant went on release via New York-based Paladin on roughly 200 screens in the U.S. in March. It's an Erdogan, and for those of you who don't know who Erdogan is, he is the president of Turkey, and he would like to bring back the Ottoman Empire. He would like to make sure that the emigres get to Calais, and there, remember, we've heard the reports that the social activists, the left, are there bringing food and bringing things to shelter all the new refugees, bringing them back to Calais. He would like to get them into Europe, and it's certainly not for keeping them homeless somewhere. He wants them to migrate deeply into Europe and change the entire character of Europe. They pretty well succeeded in France, but we're still watching that race with Marine Le Pen. Will it be like Donald Trump? Will she edge ahead? The people in France are not stupid. I had a wonderful high school teacher named Frank Landis. And in World War II, he was a GI, and he went in to get a drink from the Villain family, and they formed a lifelong friendship. So he later became my French teacher in high school, and Marie-Pierre Villain came over. She was a teenager like I was, and she was there, and she stayed at my house one night. And, of course, she was a wonderful scholar. She aced the Spanish course, too, during her time at the high school, even though she had never had Spanish because French was rather similar. But one night, the lights went out in our home, and my father, the protective father he always was, wanted to sort of baby us. And she said, no, no, I am a French girl. So I always remembered the spunk and the spirit of Marie-Pierre. But France is not the France that Mr. Landis adored. We had the wonderful French meals that he made us. Oh, everything about the culture. It was just so wonderful. But the culture is different. It's totally different. So this denial film, the director said, it's an Erdogan propaganda film released as a feature film in the United States, remarkably just ahead of us. And this film, The Ottoman Lieutenant, stars Josh Hartnett and Ben Kingsley. It was produced by a Turkish company called Eastern Sunrise Films. We'll get more into this idea of the Armenian genocide later in the program. And now we do have to switch back to just some of the everyday events that are going on. I think there's a little news in the economy. Two sectors, Lou.
Two examples of the changing economy. First, the luxury market at Chicago's Trump Tower, and amazing, and that's in quotes, amazing number of condos for sale off for rent. Chicago, INS, or TNS. Chicago's Trump Tower has an unusually large number of condominiums for sale and for rent, and real estate agents predict that a glut of available units in the building may pressure owners to drop their prices. Already, renters in Trump Tower say they have been able to get sizable discounts. While it's not clear just how many of the sales in the building are being driven by politics, it is evident that far more units are up for sale than in other luxury buildings in the downtown area. No comparison is perfect because the very high-end Elysian and Waldorf buildings are small, with little turnover in units. But listener, that would be Gail Listener, Vice President of Appraisal Research Counselors, said that while Trump Tower has 52 of its 486 units on the market, the John Hancock building has 26 out of 703 for sale. Water Tower Place has 9 out of 260 for sale. Aqua has 12 out of 262. 340 on the Park has 11 out of 343. 600 North Lakeshore Drive has 20 out of 395. and the Heritage has 5 out of 358. The average price of condos for sale in the building, however, does not reflect competitive pressures. In fact, the average sale price was $1.16 million for the last 6 months, compared with $1.08 million during a comparable time last year. Waller said, and that would be, Walker said, excuse me, that's John, I'm searching for the name here, well, it's not important. Owners during the past 6 months said their units or sold their units for 93.7% of their list price. During a comparable time last year, it was only 91.8%. Listeners said the average sales price per square foot during the last quarter of 2016 was $861, an increase over the $840 during the first two quarters of the year. Broken wonders if some units already are coming onto the market because owners want to sell before the price drops as people move into the new luxury building, the Wanda Vista Tower, which is scheduled to open in 2020. For clients seeking a luxury, he said, the newest building tends to be the attraction. And now, Coca-Cola says it will begin cutting 1,200 jobs later this year.
And of course, we're moving now to the arena of the common man. We're not in those luxury apartments, are we, Lou?
No, Atlanta, TNS. Coca-Cola said last week it will be eliminating 1,200 corporate jobs later this year as part of an expanded cost-cutting program. Coca-Cola president James Quincey, who is set to take over as chief executive of the Atlanta company on May 1st, announced the job cuts during the company's first quarter earnings call with investors. No specifics were immediately available on how many jobs might be cut at Coca-Cola's headquarters, but a company spokesman said the number would be quote-unquote significant. The Coca-Cola spokesman, Kent Landers, we expect to see changes throughout our corporate organization, including Atlanta and elsewhere, as we fundamentally change the way we work to be faster, more agile, and more efficient. While we don't yet know the exact impact on Atlanta, we expect it will be a significant percentage of the total, unquote. The company has about 7,500 employees in Metro Atlanta and 9,000 in Georgia, including both bottling operations and its corporate headquarters. Landis said the job cuts would come from a pool of about 5,500 corporate employees who work in or report to the company's headquarters. While these necessary changes are always very difficult, they will help us do fewer things better to lead and support our operating units, said Quincey, who is replacing longtime CEO Mutah Kent. The cost-cutting effort will result in a, quote, more focused, lean corporate center, he said. Quincey said the job cuts will begin in the second half of this year and extend into 2018. He said the reductions are part of the company's efforts to save about $800 million by 2019 through job cuts, reduce marketing spending, and restructuring some of its operations. Last week's announcement represents an expansion of Coca-Cola's long-running cost-cutting campaign in response to slumping sales of sodas, the company's largest product category. Customers have been turning to other drinks and avoiding sugary sodas, partly due to concerns about the risk of obesity and diabetes. In 2015, Coca-Cola announced plans to cut costs by $3 billion by 2019. Including the new efforts, Quincey said the cost-cutting target now goes to $3.8 billion. Coca-Cola has 100,300 employees worldwide, including 57,300 in North America.
One of the biggest concerns that we have here at this program is, are we going to beat those war drums? Are we going to be in another quagmire? And by the way, this program, The Divided Kingdom, We named it because we have the double focus, the kingdom of Jesus Christ, and we have the world, the sinful world. And we, as Christians, have to live in both. So it is important that we think about tonight the actual divided kingdom, Satan's world, God's world. And over the next couple weeks, you probably will be hearing more about the apostate church and various things that are going to shock you. So we see this conflict going on all the time spiritually. It's much more of a spiritual battle than it is a political battle or an economic battle. It really is. But we said earlier that one of the reasons that Lou and I went on the radio back in 2003, we decried the Iraq war, that illegal war that put us there in that quagmire in the Middle East. And so now we think that it is a Bloomberg report that General McMaster wants boots on the ground in Afghanistan. Now, also recently, we saw a news blurb about several U.S. soldiers who were killed, and they thought it was possibly by friendly fire. Now, we're wondering here, were these men like the late Pat Tillman, patriots, who knew too much about the huge government poppy fields enterprise? No, the deep state government is not your friend. So is this what happened? We don't know. But Americans do not want another quagmire. We do not want this quagmire of Afghanistan to continue decade after decade, killing our sons and daughters. We hope that message can get directly to President Donald Trump. It's very important. And we do not ever agree with columnist Georgianne Geyer's love of population control as politics brings it, or as perhaps eugenics favors it. We don't like it. But one thing to her credit, she does not like these quagmire wars that we've been in. And she has a very clever column, May the 2nd, 2017. Language leads to history lesson. Washington. How absolutely grand a moment it must have been when the White House got the idea of comparing the American aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson en route supposedly to scare North Korea to the Spanish Armada. How shoulders must have suddenly squared and necks stretched tall. Why, Merriam-Webster noted online that the word armada steamed and, yes, quote, streamed to the floor of our lookups after the word was used. The present-day emotional debut of the history-laden word, of course, came from President Donald Trump himself when he told Fox Business, "We are sending an armada, very powerful." And thus, the USS Carl Vinson carrier strike group, consisting of the carrier, two destroyers, and one cruiser, set off across the Pacific, getting a little lost along the way, but never mind. After that, the word armada seemed to take on a life of its own. It was in every headline in the newspapers and on every eager tongue on TV news. And as the word sailed on, one could almost see the huge original armada of King Philip II of Catholic Spain in 1588, 130 ships carrying about 8,000 sailors and 19,000 infantrymen, sailing from Lisbon northward to destroy Protestant England, flags flying, oceans roiling, empire shaking. One would also do well to recall that the Spanish referred to it as the Invincible Armada. Sad case of counting one's chickens before they could swim the English Channel, or something like that. The Spaniards were certain their attack on England would gain for the Spanish king the English crown as well. But perhaps we might pause for a moment. Has anyone really not read any history? It so happens that history is painfully clear on the outcome of that bespoke Invincible Armada. The English were not only ready with 197 ships with about 16,000 mostly experienced sailors, but the ships were low-flying and easily maneuverable, unlike the enormous Spanish sailing ships. The English were also under superior commanders, Sir Francis Drake among them. While the Spanish soon foundered in their huge and beautiful but clumsy ships, the English were making daring moves and raids, tormenting the Spanish with their long guns and using the winds they knew so well to confound their enemy. In the end, the defeat of the Armada turned out to be one of the great routes of history and is known everywhere as such. The surviving Spanish retreated to Spain in shame, while some landed in Ireland only to be killed by English troops. In the end, fewer than half the Spanish fleet was able to return home, while the English lost no ships at all and only a few hundred men. On a larger scale, the defeat of Spain by the English fleet marked the defeat of Catholic monarchical Spain and the rise of Protestant England as a world power and the primary power in the New World. England also took over Spain's position as master of the sea at this moment in naval history. I must pause here and note that this is only a bit of reflection, and it has no negative bearing on the value of our respected modern U.S. Navy. No, it is merely a reflection on language and the grandiose rhetoric that is an incurable illness caused by an obsession with cable news. And here I would like Lou to read this last part of Georgianne Geyer's column. And as he reads it, think about the warmongers, the neocons, all of that faction crying for war in Syria, Lindsey Graham, all of the others who want these war drums.
Since about 9/11, and since too many of America's leaders apparently intend to keep our nation permanently engaged in one war or another, we can trace how the language of warfare in America has changed. During the first months and then years of the Iraq War, Americans stopped speaking of American soldiers, in quotes. It became fashionable to speak of American warriors. This, of course, is in part what happens when you have a volunteer army. They can be, and indeed are, terrific fighters. But they are not, in fact, citizen soldiers, the original idea of America's army. They fight as a profession, not a duty, and they tend to see fighting as something grand. Terms thus naturally inflate, like upgrading the Vincent Strike Group to an armada. Thus, one hears a new language, and it is the language not of democracy, but of a yearning for old imperial grandeur, at least on the part of the White House. So, maybe it would be a good idea if our leaders watched less cable TV, and even occasionally read a history book. For history is a mischievous mistress, and will always in the end have her way with you. Meanwhile, let us say a prayer together. Please, dear Lord, assure us that no one in the White House has yet heard of Gallipoli, Dunkirk, or Guernica.
And maybe you just quickly refresh a few of those sites, what they were. How about Dunkirk?
Yes, Dunkirk was that famous evacuation. And Churchill, while praising the fleet of small ships that got the soldiers off of the shores of France when Nazi Germany had surrounded them and was about to destroy them, Churchill said, "Wars are not won by evacuations." The other two, Guernica was in the Spanish Civil War when the Francos, that would be the reactionary or right-wing group, got help from Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler used it as a time to test out his Luftwaffe, his air force, and they bombed this little town of Guernica in Spain. And it was made famous by a painting by Pablo Picasso, one of his abstract paintings, showing people torn apart and the terrible damage of war. Gallipoli was in World War I. It was a pet project of Winston Churchill when he was a young man and first Lord of the Admiralty. And it was a bungled attempt to attack Germany, Kaiser Wilhelm's Germany, or Wilhelm's Germany, from the backside, that is going up through, I believe, Turkey, near Istanbul, somewhere in that area, to try and attack them from the opposite side, instead of through France, up through this Gallipoli. But it was a disaster, and Churchill never really lived it down, although he became a great hero in World War II. But it was looked upon as one of the biggest bungles Britain ever did, and they lost a lot of men and gained just about absolutely nothing by it. So these are a few instances of the, what should we say? Well, I'll turn it over to Elizabeth.
Debacles, military debacles. We can dream big, but we have to know war is war. And on the 100th day, Donald Trump invigorated and enchanted the crowd during a rally in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. This was in the Washington Post, April 29th. And we heard another report that he said something about the undocumented immigrants, something about a dark song or a dark theme. But we hope and pray that he's not backing away from protecting our country, from becoming like France and England. We plead with you to pray for President Donald Trump, that he is not swayed by the Council on Foreign Relations members who are now coming in like swarming bees to a beehive. We ask you to pray that he will remain true and steadfast to his love of America. And if he does, pray for his protection. I will make a prayer. Lord Jesus Christ, we just come to you as ordinary Americans, Lou and I, Mr. and Mrs. America, an example of the common people, and we do not want war. We do not want what happens over there in the Middle East to eventually come here, because it is like a boomerang. Spiritually, what we give out, we get back. And it isn't karma. It's just what we sow, we reap. And that means as a nation as well. So we do pray that you will help Donald Trump as our president, and that you will give him true, strong advisors to counterbalance the men who are sold out, blackmailed, the men who are Marxists, the men who never understood what this country means to the ordinary people. And we pray that you will help the Christian remnant who listen to this program as the years go by, as long as Lou and I can help as watchmen. We want to strengthen them physically, emotionally, spiritually. And we do thank you for your prayers for us while we had 6 weeks of pneumonia. It was tough. You heard Lou coughing 1 week, and it was pretty tough. And Lou needs some prayers right now for healing of his sciatica. It's very important if some of you out there could pray for us to be strengthened. We do believe in the King James Version of the Bible being the preferred Bible, the truer Bible. It doesn't avoid the divinity of Jesus Christ. It doesn't get the heresy of omitting a lot of passages out of the Bible like the newer versions. So you see, we're trying to remain true as Bible-believing Christians. So at any rate, do pray for with me now again. Lord Jesus Christ, we do ask you to bless Donald Trump, and again, to surround him with warrior angels and his family too. Keep him very, very safe, and keep him in your care. And if whatever mistakes he's made, just turn them into victories for you. In your precious name we pray, amen. Now, we're going to see some of the playback here. The conflict, we said, we're always in this world between Jesus Christ's world and Satan's world. And so some of the things that we thought were going to happen may not be happening that should be happening. For instance, we should have had Planned Parenthood defunded. Now, there was something that we had heard earlier through InfoWars that Donald Trump was going to defund the National Institutes of Health, because a lot of clandestine, sinister kinds of experiments have gone on there, we hear that this is alleged. And at the time, that was the story around mid-April, around April 16th. We had a column by Cokie and Stephen Roberts. And again, they are very liberal columnists, and they're probably Council on Foreign Relations people. In our local newspaper, we saw a picture one day of Cokie Roberts visiting Washington College. And she was there with former Senator Barbara Mikulski, and Sheila Bair, the president of the college, who was a very big figure in government for some years. So they're all liberals. And I was struck by the picture of Cokie, and I showed it to Lou, and it was a little bit scary. Her face, it was almost looking at skull and crossbones kind of skull. It was strange. And so we know that they're very, very liberal, she and her husband, Stephen Roberts. And this was what they said April 16th. Under Trump's budget, the Department of Health and Human Services, which includes the CDC, would lose 18% of its funding. And another program that supports the CDC's preventive health efforts would be eliminated entirely. That would mean more kids who don't get vaccinated, more smokers who don't quit, more drivers who don't wear seat belts, and it would mean far greater vulnerability to global health threats like Ebola, Zika, and influenza. As the Post reports, diseases travel fast and don't recognize borders. In today's connected world, a disease can be transported from a rural village to any major city within 36 hours. So you see, this was kind of a damage control, I think. This was to build up the idea that we needed the NIH and we needed the CDC to get all these children vaccinated. And earlier in the article, it says, no cuts would be more damaging than the president's assault on two invaluable agencies, the National Institutes of Health, NIH, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. And they said, fortunately, some Republicans understand the president's foolishness, including Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma, chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee that funds those agencies. He called them the first lines of defense for the American people for some pretty awful things. We could read that sentence in two ways. The first line of defense for some pretty awful things, maybe contribution of some pretty awful things. But you see now, we've had some changes. And according to William Jasper of the New American Magazine, a lot of these Council on Foreign Relations people who have been brought in around Trump are changing things. And this wouldn't be for the good. I think we now need to have Lou show us what's missing from Trump's $1 trillion new spending bill. This is very recent, May the 2nd, 2017. I want you to pay particular notice to the item on Planned Parenthood and sanctuary cities. I am rather heartbroken.
Washington, TNS. Congressional negotiators have come up with a $1.07 trillion plan to keep the government running to the end of September. But there's a lot missing from the 1,665-page bill. And much of it involves items that President Donald Trump promised during his campaign and the early days of his presidency. Here's a list of GOP-friendly issues missing from the spending bill. Border wall. The bill includes $1.5 billion for border security, but noticeably absent is any funding for a border wall on the U.S.-Mexican border, a major promise of the Trump administration to curb illegal immigration.
I'm going to interject here before Lou finishes the list. An editorial viewpoint that I thought was very much common sense, this, believe it or not, came out of the Chicago Tribune May 1st. And this is ironic, too. May the 1st, that day, beloved of the communists, it really began in the French Revolution. So it's not on the side of Christianity. The French Revolution wanted to destroy all Christianity. Mayday. So this is Trump can climb down from the wall. You know, I said we were going to build a wall and Mexico was going to pay for it. But it turns out the bad hombres heard about Trump and they stopped coming. They gave up. So we don't even need a wall. We just needed to let everybody know they're not going to take advantage of us anymore. And believe me, they know it. And why would I make Mexico pay for a wall when they're helping us out like they never did before? You wouldn't believe the cooperation we're getting now. The Mexicans have been tremendous. It sounds like Donald Trump, but it's not something he said. It's something he could say if he wants a lasting way out of a self-created problem. Until he changed direction this week, the biggest hang-up on a measure to keep the government operating after Friday was his demand that Congress appropriate billions to start construction of that, quote, big, beautiful wall he had promised last year. But he hadn't been getting many takers on Capitol Hill. Democrats are united against paying for the barrier, and plenty of Republicans don't think it's feasible or affordable. Nor is the public convinced. A new Washington Post ABC News poll has 60% of Americans against the idea, which would include some people who voted for him. So, on Monday night, Trump began to climb down from the wall, explaining that he's content to have this fight later. If he again changes tack, another government shutdown could occur, to the exasperation of voters who hoped last year's election would end the partisan gridlock. For the moment, though, Trump has flummoxed critics who hoped his demand for wall funding would lead to a shutdown and a widespread verdict of incompetence. And here's more good news for Trump. Illegal crossings from Mexico have dropped like a rock, a reaction presumably to the unwelcome mat he put out January 20th. The number of people apprehended trying to sneak in was down 64% in March compared with March 2016, bringing the number to the lowest in 17 years. Quote, "The perception of stricter enforcement can change behavior," end of quote, concludes conservative writer David Frum in The Atlantic. The case against Trump's favorite idea is familiar. It would be a logistical nightmare to construct a wall across 2,000 miles of terrain, some of it rugged desert and some of it liquid in the form of the Rio Grande. Land would be expropriated. The project would take years, and the cost would be high. The Department of Homeland Security prices it at $21.6 billion, but a report by the Democratic staff of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee says the tab would be more than triple that figure. So you see, I'm interjecting, that would be like $60 billion. And let's not forget the Mexican government has unequivocally rejected ever providing a peso for this structure. The president may also have noted that a growing share of foreigners living here illegally came here legally as tourists or students and simply didn't leave when their time was up. For this cohort, a wall would be irrelevant. Stemming this flow requires putting more resources into tracking such visitors to assure that they depart on schedule. Money that goes to the wall, alas, can't be spent on this and other types of immigration enforcement that hold greater promise. But spending for other types of enforcement would appeal to more members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. Trump may not have trouble getting funds for better technology and other border impediments, anything other than a wall. Maybe that's been his gambit as the budget deadline approaches. Talk about a wall, but win appropriations for other security improvements. His supporters aren't likely to object much. If this switcheroo is his strategy, it could let him achieve progress on the basic issue without abandoning his campaign pledge. And if he never gets around to fulfilling that pledge, we're confident Trump will find a way to portray that as a victory. We hope there will be a victory. So now, let's get back to that list. What's missing from Trump's $1 trillion new spending bill? And Lou told us that the border wall, now pay attention to the next item because it's very, very dear to the heart of all real Christians.
Planned Parenthood. There are no cuts for Planned Parenthood, a target of abortion opponents and many Republicans for its provision of abortion services. Republicans have threatened to shut down the federal government in the past over Planned Parenthood funding. Deportation forces. During the presidential campaign, Trump promised to build a, quote, new special deportation task force, unquote, to remove billions of immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. No funding goes toward such a force. The bill does, however, fund 5,000 additional detention beds. $18 billion cut in non-defense spending. There is no sign of massive non-defense spending cuts, another goal of the Trump administration. The Environmental Protection Agency maintains nearly 99% of its funding. $295 million goes toward Medicaid in Puerto Rico, and $4.6 billion is set aside to permanently grant health benefits to 22,000 retired Appalachian coal miners. In a March budget proposal, the Trump administration sought to cut EPA funding by $2.6 billion. It also aimed to decrease funding for the National Institutes of Health by $5.8 billion. Instead, NIH will receive a funding increase of $2 billion. Sanctuary cities. So-called sanctuary cities, which limit cooperation with the federal government on immigration law in order to shelter immigrants here illegally, will not be deprived of federal funding. Trump has threatened to withhold funds from sanctuary cities in the past.
So there again, you saw two issues that are very, very important to all of us Americans. The one was Planned Parenthood. That was so important that we would have cuts there when we had all that expose of the baby parts being sold. And the sanctuary cities, how come we're not going to even deprive them of federal funding? I think that's almost treason. Whoever did that bill, and this is Congress, they're sold out. You'd better know it. It'll come down to one day, a generation or two from now, your children will have to be defending themselves, like in France. It's not going to be good. It's definitely not going to be good. And the deportation forces, we have to hope that something is doing well there, whether or not this says that we're not going to have a new special deportation force. We have some faith in Jeff Sessions. We have some faith in Rod Rosenstein, who has been appointed second there, who will be investigating the silly fake news of Russian involvement. But we have this war between the deep state and between the nationalists. And we had a column on April 29th by Lee Hamilton. Lee Hamilton of the infamous 9/11 committee to investigate 9/11. You know, it was like the Warren Commission of the early 2001-2002 time. And so he says of Trump, one source of hope is the president himself. His policy switches on China and Syria may have been abrupt. And there he's speaking of the strike on Syria after the so-called sarin gas attack, which both the British ambassador and Dr. Ron Paul have said they believe firmly was a false flag event. You know, are we still involved in regime change? Are we still putting our boots on the ground there in Syria? Are we going to try to take out Bashar Assad, who wasn't perfect, but kept the Alawites and the Christians safe? Are we still going to do this? Well, according to Lee Hamilton, he says that his policy switches on China and Syria may have been abrupt, but they moved us in the right direction. He seems to be capable of learning and reversing himself on a broad range of policies. He appears willing to accept the sober mainstream advice of his national security team. And we were unhappy that if someone gave him the advice to go to the UN Security Council, that is President Donald Trump, and speak to them about the UN and the relevance of it as a peacekeeper and how it should expand its work. This is very troubling. It was troubling to William Jasper, who talked with David Knight on the InfoWars program. So we really have to see this push and pull. We hope and pray that Trump is authentic. We absolutely do. But at the same time, we had the witching hour echoes. Hillary Clinton said that the reason she didn't win, there were three reasons, Lou. Misogyny. Maybe you will tell the listeners what that means.
Well, I think it can be summed up by saying a hatred of women. So poor Hillary says all those ugly men would refuse to vote for her.
And I think, like most men, you don't hate all women. Maybe you do dislike some very loud-mouthed, very liberal ones, and I'm not going to name a name, but there could be one big name there, Lou. Her second reason was the Russian hacking of the election, and the third was the mistakes of the FBI. Well, I think their biggest mistake was they didn't indict her, but we'll see. Now, Dr. Jerome Corsi of WorldNet Daily and InfoWars brought out a big revelation, and this was given some time ago, and now it's going to the mainstream by Steven Mnuchin, and we know that he is the Secretary of the Treasury, and this was given to the Fox Business Channel, that it is true that the Obama administration did swindle as much as $300 million out of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to pay into that near-insolvent Obamacare. What's troubling is that this continued to be paid in the first month of Trump's administration. This might be just because there is such a huge bureaucracy, Trump can't be expected to control all the thousands of people. But we hope now it's stopping. But more troubling to us is Trump calling for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks to be probably prosecuted or have some legal action taken toward him. When before, when he was a campaigner, Trump said this was good to have things come out. And he wanted things to come out whenever he was being watched by the NSA and whoever else was doing it. We had that. It was good. We heard that these leaks came out of WikiLeaks, and it showed that Susan Rice was getting these spreadsheets and so forth, you know, listening in on Trump. So we can't have it both ways. But you see, the Bible says a double-minded man is not good. Your yes is supposed to be a yes. Your no is supposed to be a no. Now, on the other hand, we know that it's good for a very clever, pragmatic, foxy person like Donald Trump if he's outwitting the enemy. And some of these things may be ploys. Even the Syrian strike could have been a ploy because it took the heat off all of the lie that he was connected with Russia. And now maybe we can really get some world peace if he can deal with Putin. And they can have a friendly kind of collaboration, at least for peace. So we have to watch everything. But we do love the humanity of Trump when he tells May 1st the astronauts to get to Mars by my second term. For all these detractors, you know, the ordinary American Joe still loves and responds to the humanity in Trump. It's so different than Obama with his complete duplicity. And of course, he's lifting the lid on his post-presidency career with a forum. And he was on Monday, he was speaking at the University of Chicago, and he was engaging all these students. And he said, this article, which was TNS, said, Obama also counseled students who have an interest in politics to be careful about their use of social media, but also to own any mistakes the unforgiving media may show from their past. Quote, if you had pictures of everything I did in high school, I probably wouldn't be president of the United States, he said. Well, we can think of a lot of other mistakes that we feel gave our country terrible repercussions. Now, there's a study in Friday Church News Notes that says people don't want to know future negative events. This was a study in Germany and Spain that found that 90% of respondents wouldn't want to know about forthcoming negative events. People don't want their future revealed. UPI, February 22nd, 2017. And we could go on with that, but it's important to know that the Bible speaks about their people, God's people, his people, being destroyed for a lack of knowledge. And that's why we're on the air. And if you would like to write to us, and if you would like to help us stay on the air, you can write a check or a money order. The check has to be written not to us. We cannot accept personal checks to us, but you can write it to WWCR, and you can mail it. And if you want to send a letter of encouragement, you can write to us, Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 1609. We'd like to hear from you very, very much. And we hope that we can get into a little bit more about the Armenian genocide. It's pretty important to know what it is. I heard Dr. Steve Pachinik come on InfoWars, and of course he's an intelligence agency operative of long standing. He helped Tom Clancy write his books, and he said that the Armenian massacre was used as a template by Hitler because he saw it was kind of like a laboratory experiment to see whether people would resist, how many people would resist. And, you know, that's what we're in right now. Pachinik explained this, and Alex Jones mentioned something I had never known, that Pachinik lost a lot of family in the Holocaust. So apparently he has Jewish relatives, or he is Jewish, which I did not know. But at any rate, he said that we're not quite at the time yet where we would have to be in grave danger, but we have to be watching this attempted takeover by the deep state, by the radical left, by the Marxists, by the people who really do hate Christianity and hate our country. And if we don't get into this fully here tonight, we're going to get into it more the next time about the Armenian genocide. But it was interesting to me that that there was this movie premiere of this new movie, and I saw in a celebrity magazine there were three people. One was Cher, and one was Kourtney Kardashian and Kim Kardashian. Of course, they were criticizing Kim. And of course, since this is a celebrity magazine, this could have been a blatant lie. They claimed that Kim just went to the beginning to, you know, show off her fashion sense and so forth, and didn't stay to watch the movie. So we don't really know about that. But what's interesting, there was a set of pictures that came out and some text from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum on the Armenian genocide. And on the very front, there is a picture of, it was sort of like an ad. The plight of the Armenians triggered an unprecedented public philanthropic response in the United States. Many private American citizens were active in providing relief for Armenian survivors. This poster illustrates the Lest We Perish campaign of the American Committee for Relief in the Near East to raise $30 million for relief in Armenia, Greece, Syria, and Persia. And the interesting part is the woman who is the model there on that ad, Lest We Perish, looks exactly like Cher. And I think I'm correct. I'm not positive. I think Cher's last name is Sarkeesian. I'm not certain. But it was interesting, too, to me that her mother, Georgia, is alive at 92. And from pictures, looks amazing for that age. And then as I look through some of these faces, because it's always the humanity that we see, even when we see pictures of the people lost in the Jewish Holocaust, there was another picture of a little ad for relief of a little boy, and he's the spitting image of little Mason, Kourtney Kardashian's little boy. And I've always thought he looked so intelligent and so precocious. These are real people. These are real Christians who were murdered and killed. But thankfully, there was a warning from God, and some young boy had a prophecy. Some of the people were to leave, and the ones who listened to God were saved. And this little picture says, "You won't let me starve, will you?" The little boy who looks like Mason. We have so much more to talk about the divided kingdom next time, Satan's world and Jesus' world. What is the church doing? We have a big update on some of the churches you won't believe. So tune in again next week for the Divided Kingdom. Good night.